This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying here because there's right now a case to be made for the Outer Space Treaty and other accords going forwards. I'm thinking of the Artemis Accords, arranging nations of the Earth into factions. And Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black, is here to help us. This is geopolitics. Actually, we'll rename it Geosolar System. Bob, a very good evening to you. The solar system awaits prosperity, exploration, colonies. Preparing for that are treaty organizations. What is the Artemis Accords?
Good evening, John. Well, the Artemis Accords are the U.S.'s attempt to create a new alliance in space that supports the idea of private property and legal protections thereof of people's investments, basically a bottom-up system based upon the Constitution and the legalities that the U.S. has that protect individuals and companies. And so they, to do that, the Trump administration created something called the Artemis Accords, which are bilateral agreements between the United States and another country, and they can sign it with many different countries. Those countries that sign are agreeing, are stating they are getting permission to partner with the U.S. in its Artemis project to settle the solar system, to explore the solar system, build a base on the moon, etc. But in order to become partners in that program, they got to sign the Artemis Accords, which essentially says we're going to respect property rights in space and the legal rights of private citizens and companies on their on what they own. That is to get around the Outer Space Treaty, which has been around for more than a half century and basically does not allow property rights in space, not in a clear way. And so this week the news was that the nation of Colombia became the 19th nation to sign the Artemis Accords. And there's a whole range of countries across the world that are sign this. A large percentage of them are spacefaring countries. A lot of them are third world countries, such as Colombia is a good example. But you've got the United Kingdom as a signatory, Japan, Luxembourg, the Ukraine, a whole range of countries, 19 different countries. And what this story was accompanied the same day by another story whereby France and India, who have both, by the way, not signed the Artemis Accords, they announced their own bilateral agreement to strengthen their partnership in many ways, but they included space as well. And what is that France and India, as well as Germany, have not yet signed the Artemis Accords has, to me, suggested that they have some reluctance. And, it would seem natural that Germany and France would sign the Artemis Accords because they're part of the European Space Agency, the longtime alliance since World War II. They have, constitutional property rights, the same thing. You'd think they'd sign. And India as well, you'd think they'd sign. But both those countries have had partnerships, including Germany, with Russia. And Russia opposes the Artemis Accords. So to sign the Artemis Accords would put them in a situation where they might not be able to continue their partnerships with Russia. Well, their partnerships with Russia have gone away because of the Ukraine war, and yet still France and India have not signed. And instead, they've signed an agreement by them together. What this suggests to me is we're beginning to see the future factional alliances that will exist in outer space. You got France and Russia and China have partnered, and they don't want to sign the Artemis Accords. They don't like property rights in space. They want everything controlled by the government. And then you've got the Artemis Accords led by the United States, which is picking up on most of the other countries with property rights. And then you've got a third mid-ground alliance, which includes France and India at this moment. It might eventually include Germany, same issues Germany has as with France. But either way, that's giving us a sense of where these alliances are going, and we're just going to see how that plays out. But we're beginning to get a sense now of where this is going to be. There are going to be some nations that are spacefaring that are not going to sign on with either the Artemis Accords in the U.S. or Russia and China.
Bob, in your measure, does this resemble in any fashion or does it derive from the debates over Antarctica these last decades?
It's related to Antarctica in that the treaties that establish Antarctica are very, very similar to the Outer Space Treaty, and they prevent property rights, which meant they prevented almost any development in the Antarctic continent. And there are reasons why you might want to, have some control over that for environmental reasons, but mostly it's a power game, and it prevents anyone from doing anything. And so there's been a great reluctance to do anything in space in terms of treaties that might duplicate Antarctica. And the Moon Treaty, which came later than the Outer Space Treaty, was an attempt to duplicate Antarctica, and almost nobody has signed it. And so the Artemis Accords are, once again, a reaction to Antarctica, in a sense, and the Outer Space Treaty itself. We do not want to get into an agreement, an international agreement that has wonderful-sounding good intentions that end up prevent you from doing anything, and that's essentially the story.
Starliner. What is Starliner and where is it, Bob?
Starliner is the manned capsule that Boeing is building to provide NASA ferrying services back and forth from ISS. And they've had serious problems getting this off the ground. They've had several delays, launch delays, serious technical problems. The first attempt to do an unmanned demo flight to ISS had to be aborted after launch, so they never docked with ISS. They had more than 60 software problems with that. They just didn't do due diligence to get the software together for that launch, and so they had to redo that. A year and a half later, they attempted to launch again last July, August, and just before launch, they had to scrub the launch entirely because 13 valves in the service module did not open and close as required. There was a serious, serious problem. They've since replaced that service module and done a lot of research on why those valves didn't work, and that's where the story is right now. They're hoping to launch Starliner on its first second attempt to do an unmanned mission to ISS in about 2 weeks. But the story now is that there's a serious litigation battle between Aerojet Rocketdyne, who made the valves, and Boeing, who makes Starliner. Boeing is blaming Aerojet Rocketdyne for why the valves don't work, and Aerojet Rocketdyne is saying, no, the cause was something Boeing did. And obviously it has to do with who's going to pay for the repair, the change. All this just reflects badly on both companies because the arguments they both make for why the problem happened indicate that one side or the other did not do its work very well. It suggests, once again, very bad quality control issues with both companies, both of whom, by the way, are big space government contractors. They don't do a lot of work anymore with the private sector. They basically make their money off of big contracts, mostly cost-plus contracts. And so they don't do very good work as a general rule. So that's what we've got.
Is there an explanation for why these things don't happen to SpaceX? Just luck?
No, I just said what it was. The SpaceX works for the private sector. It has to get things done right. You don't make sales if you don't do it right. And they make sure they do it right. When you do cost-plus contracts with the federal government, you don't have to do it right, because even if you screw up, the federal government will pick up the extra cost. And so, but these companies have developed very bad habits about quality control. They just don't do very good quality control. That's the problem, and that has been the problem. Now, Boeing is costing a lot. One of the reasons their battle with Aerojet Rocketdyne is occurring here is because the contract for Starliner is not cost plus. It is fixed price, which means all the extra costs that have occurred because they can't get Starliner off the ground, including the valve problem, Boeing has to eat. It has to pay for it themselves. And so they would like to get some of the costs passed on to Aerojet Rocketdyne, and Aerojet Rocketdyne doesn't want to take on that cost. That's the battle. The real issue is when you're faced with a fixed price contract where you've got to get it right, the real solution is don't argue with your subcontractors. Get it right. Make sure it works. Demand your subcontractors get it right as well. And that's where the battle is, John.
I think this is good news. Starship, June. Is it good news?
Well, this is SpaceX telling us that they're ready to launch Starship on its first orbital flight as early as June. Now, previously they had said they could have launched in before the end of last year. Then they said March. Then Elon Musk said May. Now they're saying as early as June, but more likely in July. This is not really bad news on SpaceX's part. SpaceX would have launched, I think, an earlier prototype of Starship on an attempted orbital mission back in March if they had had government approval. It would have probably failed. What they have learned, because the government is not giving them permission, is delaying this launch for regulatory reasons and political reasons. Because they've had extra time, they have they've done additional tests and upgrades and changes, and they've actually switched prototypes for the orbital mission. And by making all those changes and upgrades and fixes, it's actually, in a sense, has delayed the launch. They're now saying that their prototype number 24 of Starship will be ready to launch no later than the end of June, but more likely in late July. It still hinges on getting government approval by the FAA and other agencies and the Biden administration, giving free Americans the right to do their business. And this is where we are today. Federal government decides whether or not you're allowed to do something. And that's what SpaceX is really waiting for right now, John.
Virgin Orbit. Bob has instructed me over time not to speak poorly of Virgin Orbit, even though it's vaguely associated with Virgin Galactic. What has happened, Bob?
Well, it's not. Let's be clear about it, John. Virgin Orbit is really not related at all to Virgin Galactic, but it is related directly to Richard Branson. It is a Richard Branson company. So your skepticism because of Richard Branson is totally legitimate. However, Virgin Orbit has been successful. It is a small sat rocket company. Its rocket called Launcher One takes off from the bottom of the 747. It launches from a runway and then takes off into space, which gives the company a great deal of flexibility because they can launch from almost anywhere in the world. And Virgin Orbit has been successful. Like Rocket Lab, it is one of the three operational small-sat rocket companies. It has now done about three launches, I think, and they've got one coming up later this month. They're having success, and because they're having success, they have now signed a contract with a company to acquire two more 747s for launching in Launcher One, the creator fleet. Instead of just having one ship, they're going to have three. Now, no one makes the 747 anymore, but you can get 747s used, and that's what they're doing. They're buying them through a third company, which will then outfit them for Virgin Orbit to have a fleet, which means they're getting enough contracts to expand their fleet. This is a good sign for Virgin Orbit, John.
What is Orbex?
Orbex is another small sat rocket company. However, it is based in Scotland. They have just set up their construction facilities, and they're going to be launching from one of the two Scottish spaceports called Sutherland Space Hub. This is different than Saxaford Space, which launches from the Shetland Islands. This is at Sutherland, which is both in Scotland. But either way, Orbex is going to launch from that Sutherland Space Hub, and they released photos of a full-scale prototype of their prime rocket on its launch pad at Sutherland Space. And this prototype is basically there so they can do countdown, dress rehearsal launches, a variety of other tests, make sure their launch facility is working. And they're hoping before the end of this year to do their first launch from Sutherland Space Hub. Right now, UK has a space race going on, John, about which spaceport's going to get the first launch out of the UK ever. You've got Sutherland Space Hub with Orbex. They're hoping to launch by the end of the year. You've got the Saxaford spaceport, which hopes to have launches from one of three different companies by the end of this year. And then Cornwall has an airport that has given permission to Virgin Orbit to launch before the end of the year. So one of those three locations is going to get the first launch out of the UK in history, John, sometime hopefully before the end of this year.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. When we come back, we're going exploring, and I mean exploring, to the center of the Milky Way. I'm John Bashley.